come, let me tell you a tale of when I slayed the mighty Bunker Beast. 'Twas not long ago in the land of Fair Park City, at the course they call Wasatch Mountain. I set out that day with my two bosom brothers, Cody the Mighty and John Paul the Steadfast. We did not know when starting that day what fate awaited us, but as we approached the green land of the fourth hole, my heart did quake. For there before me was the mighty Bunker Beast, known to some as Clive. He had a fierce hold upon my ball. I drew my trusty blade and approached him, with Cody and John Paul uttering assurances that all would be well. I stepped up to my opponent, sizing up the battle ahead. My heart pounded furiously in my ears. Finally, the moment could be held off no longer. I stepped forward and took a swipe of my mighty blade, digging deep into the very center of the beast, sending both sand and my ball flying toward the green land. When the sand finished falling, my ball rolled to within a foot of the hole. I walked over and triumphantly slew the mighty Clive with but a tap of my putter while my friends cheered. If ever you find yourself before the Bunker Beast, remember this tale and let it be a boon to you. This is the tale of For the Record.
Golf, the hardest game we love to play. These are the ramblings of three nerdy golfers.
Our continuing mission? Explore strange new swing techniques to seek out lower handicaps and awesome golf courses.
And to boldly swing where a safe layup would have been the smarter choice.
Welcome back to For the Record. You got Cody, John Paul, and Eric here. And gentlemen, we only have about a month, maybe a month and a half of score counting rounds on the season before we're not allowed to enter scores anymore for the end of the season.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
I know. It's a little depressing. But anyway, that just means that we'll transition to sim time when we get there. But first, on this week of For the Record, we've got a mulligan moment, a round recap, and a new segment called The Greatest Game Ever Played. And I'm very excited for that one. And we'll talk about some other stuff along the way. But first, our mulligan moment. Eric wanted to point out, when we talked a couple of weeks ago about the VR golf, it's not Topgolf.
It's VR Plus. Or it's Golf Plus. Sorry, it's not called Topgolf at all.
And after we recorded that episode, I went and updated my Oculus and like downloaded it. And they're still updating that app now.
Oh, yeah. It's a good app. Did you get Pebble Beach?
No, I didn't.
Get Pebble Beach so we can play.
I should, but if you host, then I can just join your game. I can play with you.
No, we all need to have it to be able to play it.
Yeah.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah.
Well, fine.
And my Quest 2 is buried under 9,000 pieces of furniture in my unfinished basement right now.
That's kind of, it's more of a winter activity for me, because if I can real golf, I real golf.
Yeah.
But
fair.
Other item on our mulligan moment. This is In Memoriam. And
in
John
memoriam.
Paul, I have something for you. It's going to stay here,
but
this
wow.
is for you. At least I thought of you when I made it.
What is this? Oh, that is magnificent. Oh, I'm so touched in a deeply disturbing way.
There's something to read on the back.
Yeah, turn it around.
Okay.
And read it out loud.
Do I describe it to the listeners first, or
no.
should I just read this out loud?
Read it.
It's a shadow box, people. It says, "This shadow box was made in commemoration of the golf round where JP acted as Eric's caddy and Cody let the competition get the better of him. In an attempt to calm the tension, JP gathered random items from the course and placed them in Cody's golf cart, accidentally neglecting his caddy duties." These are those actual items minus the tee, which is a tribute to JP's tee that Cody threw away after JP mocked his pre-shot routine September 4th, 2025. And I'm looking at it. It's a little shadow box. It's got three half golf balls. It's got my feng shui leaf that I left. It's got my pine cone and my rock. It's magnificent. It brings back such horrible memories.
You thought I threw everything away because as we turned our carts in, you're like, you didn't keep the stuff?
I was like,
nope, I didn't. I threw them in my bag without you looking.
That's awesome. That is the greatest thing ever. Oh my goodness.
I think it deserves a spot on our shelf here.
I
was, my original plan was to encase it all in epoxy.
Oh, I think it's pretty great.
Well, that's the thing. I was at the store and I saw that shadow box and I was like, that's it. That's the perfect thing. I'm just going to do that.
It's magnificent. It's one of my favorite things I've ever seen.
Just so that we never forget that round.
Yeah.
The lessons we learn and subsequently ignore. Yeah.
But let's jump in and talk about today's round recap. We played a round today just about an hour ago. Gentlemen, how do you think it went?
We had our ups and downs. I would say this is probably the most tree-ish we've ever had. The ants were out in force.
They were swinging their arms right at you.
Look, the trees. They're moving.
Not just me. We all had a lot of tree trouble.
I deserved my tree trouble. I made fun of the trees.
Oh, did you? I missed that.
Can we get the sound bite from Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, they were bad.
A wizard should know better. A golfer should know better.
Yeah, exactly.
On a particular par five today, I think Eric clocked four trees.
Yeah. Yep.
On one hole. And he hit one of them really, really squarely. Like, it's going to leave a mark.
On the tree or on my ball?
Yes.
Oh.
Everything was damaged.
It was, it was rough.
The tree, the ball, your ego, everything was damaged.
To point out, so normally kind of in golf, we try and keep a little bit of pace, but we take turns kind of golfing. Generally, it's safest when the furthest person out, hits and everyone else is kind of off to the side. And if you're far enough to the side, you can go up a little bit. But I was still hitting my approach shot, and Eric had already holed out and was standing on the side of the golf hole. He was done.
Yeah. There was a lot going on with that hole.
Yeah. Like, I went to go hit my ball, and I was like, Eric just put it in. Oh, he's done.
That having been said, for all of the trials and travails today, even in not the best of circumstance, Eric did accomplish one of his season-long goals today.
He did.
I beat Cody and John Paul. Well, not John Paul today, but I've beat both of them at different times.
Yep.
Straight up stroke play. Beat Cody by one today, I believe.
He did. Two.
Oh, beat you by two.
By two.
Yeah.
And it was well-deserved because I played quite horribly.
I want to talk to you about something about today's round.
Okay.
The hole four, when you slipped. No, it was hole five. When your foot.
No, six.
Six?
Six, yeah.
Yeah, that was
six. Oh, six, yeah.
Yeah.
What happened there? Why did your, what happened?
I don't know if like the, I don't know. Like, I just went up and I thought I was fine. And when I went to swing, as soon as I started coming down, my foot just slipped out from under me and I was still mid swing and hit the ball and it just went very left because my whole body had turned 90 degrees.
Yeah. Okay. It was just interesting. For those that don't know, Cody got new golf shoes specifically to fight this exact thing and they are extremely grippy.
You know what that means, Eric? I'm just light on my feet.
Are even grippier?
Do I just need to get those 2-inch grass aeration spikes?
What we should do is we should get you back knee. Into the pre-shot routine where you do the charging bull thing.
That led to that shadow box.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. My round, I don't really want to talk too much about. It was quite horrible. There were only two highlights, okay? One was I had a magnificent drive. It was the only good drive of the entire day that went dead center of the fairway that led to a par.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the last hole, a very long par three, I landed on the green and two-putted my way for another par. Everything else was complete crap.
Well, I would like to point out a highlight moment from your round on the second hole, which is a par three, because you were in a bunker short of the green in the sand, and we were trying to, buoy you up and say, hey, this is an opportunity to beat Clive, to go out there and hit it. And to your defense, I was up on the green near my ball, and you said, hey, heads up, because, sometimes we're not the best players. Just completely thinned, bladed, and that thing missed me by inches. I almost died. I heard it fly right by my head. It was terrifying.
As soon as I hit it and I saw that it was thin, there was not even enough reaction time for me to be like, look out, or four, or anything. It was just, did I just kill John Paul? And luckily it whizzed past.
I will say if I do get killed that way, I will die doing what I love, but I would prefer to go home to my wife.
And you're going
to
come haunt me afterwards? Is that what you're going to say? Every time I go to putt on the course,
you're
going to
hear this.
You're the puttergeist.
You're going to hear this exactly. Tiny whisper behind you saying, you suck at golf, and your ball will just boink, fly away.
Oh, man.
That's the way I used to feel about every chip that I had. I've been doing a lot better. I'm much less likely to miss chip and hit John Paul these days.
Yeah. Bunkers, they terrify me. And I tried something new, didn't work. Tried something new a couple weeks ago, didn't work. So I have a new strategy, and I think it's going to work.
Try something new?
No. Just don't hit it in the bunker.
Yeah, do what John Paul does.
Good thinking.
Yeah.
Good thinking. I've decided I need to aim away from bunkers because I have yet again, all season, I've played many rounds of golf. I've been in two bunkers. Two times I've been in a bunker all season. It's ridiculous. I was so excited today. I thought, again, I had gotten into the black sand bunker. Missed it by 2 yards. I just can't.
I told you. You kept saying you got it in, and I was like, no, it's too far to the left.
So
I think that we need the reverse foot wedge. You know, some people kick the ball to give them the better lie.
To get out of the bunker, I need to start kicking it into the bunker.
There we go.
Doink. Okay. Great. I do want to talk about my round today, though, because in the last episode, I was talking about how I've got a bit of a feel and that it's close. And
yeah.
I didn't have a fantastic round today, but it felt solid. It felt really.
Oh yeah!
I thought you had a pretty great round.
It was good. It was good. It was nothing to be ashamed of. I post that score any day. I'm happy with that score.
It was a sub bogey score.
Yeah, it was a 43, solid 43. But I do want to say that I'm very excited by it because I went with our good friend Sean on Saturday, and him and I golfed 18 holes. He has golfed twice in his life. So he is not a great golfer. He loves going, and he's eager to learn and will probably pick it up over time. And so it was really nice to go out, and I just decided we'd play a scramble together. Now, granted, we played from the whites, and we were playing a scramble, so there's a little bit less tension there. But the truth is that he really struggles to make contact of any kind with the ball, and so I really didn't get many strokes from him, and we posted a scramble score from the whites of a 79 on 18 holes. And that is not shabby at all, considering he only gave a few. What was interesting about that is that I felt ball striking wise exactly the same today as I felt on Saturday. The only difference is I was so much better on the greens on Saturday because on Saturday I didn't care.
Mm.
And today I cared and I was trying to, I'm so scared when I putt. I'm putting so scared. It's ridiculously conservative.
You hit quite timid a few times.
So many times today.
There was also, you got out of some really sticky situations today. There were a couple of times where you blocked it out right, hit it very toe-y, and it just shot right out mm-hmm. on you.
Yeah.
And you managed to come back from them each time.
Oh, yeah. Can I talk about the last hole? Let's celebrate the last hole because the last hole today is going to be a moment that lives in history forever. So we'll begin by going through the tee shots to begin with. So Cody teed off first.
What was the distance?
It's a 171 par 3.
Pretty aggressive wind today.
Yeah.
Left to right wind.
Yep. So I hit a 6-iron and I actually thought it was going to land right side off of the green, but I knew it was going to be the right distance.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually just trickled kind of right on the right side of the green. And yeah. I was about a foot or two off of the fringe. So I was on the green in one.
And we've played that hole many, many times. And to your recollection and my recollection, I think that is the first time that you've hit the green in one on that
yes.
hole.
Yes. Yep.
Then John Paul hits.
Yeah. And I blocked a toe block right with my 6-iron is probably the second worst iron shot that I hit all day. Absolutely awful. Settled underneath a juniper tree, well short, probably what, 35, 40 yards short?
At least 40.
At least 40 yards short of the green in the deep right rough underneath a juniper tree.
Hmm.
And then
I hit and I never saw the ball.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It looked like it was tracking the pin the entire time. I think it just, it didn't land soft, and so it hit on the green in front of the flag and then rolled past it, so you were just on the fringe on the back.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, you guys were freaking out, and I was like,
no, it was,
I have no idea.
It was on the pin. It tracked so beautifully, and the sound that it made, the click, was just perfect.
It felt good. Ooh. I was a little worried that I was going to get a hole-in-one and not watch it.
that would suck. But anyway, it ended up just long on the up fringe, which is a terrible place to miss on that hole, right? Because the whole green slants away.
You're on the high side, so it's a downhill putt from the fringe.
And it's not a subtle green. No. It's not like there's a tiny bit of break. It is sloped dramatically.
Yeah.
So it's very testy.
It's almost a 45.
There. Yeah. So I was away. And from underneath the juniper, there was no way of going directly at the green over because there was no getting, you had to keep it quite low under the juniper. And so I hit probably the greatest 7-iron toe punch in the history of golf. I smacked it. It landed just actually a hair further than when I visualized it going. It was a little hotter than I thought, but that deep grass just ate all the speed and it just had enough to trickle up about 3 feet on the green, left me about 8 feet for par.
Yep. So then we get up there. I had a long par putt, but I think you actually hit yours first off of the fringe.
I did. I hit mine off the fringe, and it was, like we said, it was a slippery one. So I did not give it much pace, and I gave it a lot of respect.
You tapped it.
I tapped it.
And it got 80% of the way there.
Yeah. I was really happy with the result. I was afraid it was going to roll right off the green, and it ended up stopping about 3 feet from the hole.
3 feet, yeah.
Yeah.
So then I go to take my putt, and I was pin high with the pin, and I gave it 2 feet to the right.
Yeah, it's a crazy slidey.
I knew it was going to banana to the left as it went up, and it was about a medium speed putt, and I hit it. It looked like it was tracking the entire way.
It did.
It did. I missed really close.
I missed the cup for the birdie putt by about an inch. Maybe two.
And rolled a foot past?
Yeah, it was a foot past. So it was a tap-in par.
Yeah.
It was great.
Tap-in par for Cody on his first time ever hitting that green in regulation.
It's almost like if you play the game the way it's supposed to be played that your score works out for you.
Yeah, but the nice thing is that your putt and my putt were on the same side of the hole. So I got a pretty good read off of yours. And I saw what you did, and I was like, I want slightly tricklier pace. And so I played it a little higher than you did, and it just rolled straight into the heart for one of the greatest pars ever. I can't believe I saved par from over there under that juniper.
So after all of this pressure, we all turned to Eric.
And so we had our fourth today, Parker, who's been on the show before, Cody's friend from high school. And he was just outside of me, so he putted first. So I got a good read to see how much break it had on it. So then I got up to it, and I putted it right in. It was all three of ours were right in the heart.
And when we're talking about break, I think a lot of people, when they think about extreme break, are thinking, oh, that starts well outside the hole or, you know, there's something like that.
This was feet.
This is feet of break. So Eric's putt was probably a 3 or 4 foot putt. His cleanup putt was probably a 3 or 4 foot putt. And I would say on a 4 foot putt, there was a foot of break.
Yeah, I aimed about a foot to the left.
Crazy. And it rolled right in. It was beautiful, no doubt.
I don't know if there's been a time that we have all three of us parred on the same hole.
We have now, and so we're going to celebrate that. And I don't. It's not a birdie, but I feel like we're gonna chink the glasses extra hard during our birdie bev today.
Don't break our steins.
That was a spectacular moment.
For those that don't know, we have mini steins for our birdie bevs.
I love moments in golf where you feel for just a split second like you actually know how to play the game.
Yeah, that felt great.
Someone on our socials actually said that we should freeze these before we pour the root beers into them. That's a good idea.
Now it's time for a new segment, and we're calling it The Greatest Game Ever Played.
This isn't going to be a recurring thing, though.
No, I think it's just a one-timer, but I think it's such an interesting discussion topic because there's so much that goes into it. I think it's worth giving some serious consideration. So we'll give everybody a moment to think about this, and we would love to hear from our listeners at home, too, if you want to chime in on this. But I want to imagine that you have some magical ability. Let's say you're granted a TARDIS. Let's make the TARDIS green because this is a golf-centric TARDIS. And you can go into history and grab any player that's ever played the game at their peak. And then you can gather these players together at any course that you want, at any time in history, with the equipment from that time, and have them play one round.
Wait, the equipment from that time, or everyone's now using the same equipment?
Everybody uses the same equipment.
Okay, but you're saying where they play, like...
Yeah, so we could say you could be playing, you know, 1890s Augusta National, or 1890s St. Andrews.
Everyone's
you could play 1970s Augusta. You could play 2025, you know, Scottsdale. Like, you get to pick where they play, and then who do you bring? Who do you want to see? And who do you think wins?
Hold on. You said something earlier that I need to clarify. We're talking about a TARDIS. We're taking this time travel.
Mm-hmm.
I need to know in one quick sentence, who's your favorite doctor?
Oh, that's no contest. That's the 10th.
Do you know your favorite doctor who?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. On three, should we try this?
Wait.
Do we have different answers?
I'll count it down on my fingers. Ready? 3, 2, 1. David Tennant. Yeah, David Tennant is the greatest doctor ever.
Okay, sorry. I almost said, who is your favorite Doctor Who and why is it David Tennant? But, okay, oh, yeah. Anyway, back
who
to
the game. Who is your favorite Doctor Who and why is it David Tennant?
Back to the game.
Okay, so let's say that you can get 10 golfers. Let's see if we can make a list
let's
of 10
5.
People.
10's going to take too long.
Five? I like 10.
Okay, let's do 5.
Do we each have our own list?
I think we can argue. I think we come up with one list, but I think okay. We can argue people on or off that list.
Okay.
Ooh, I know how we're going to do this.
Okay.
You know how when you play golf, it's a multi-round?
Mm.
We're going to say that this is a special exempted tournament with 3 rounds, so we each pick a round of the place and time.
Oh, okay. So we can each have a course and we can each have a time period, and then but we come to consensus on the 5 players.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's start with Eric. Eric, who would be your number one player? If you could pick any player out of their peak in history, who do you take?
And this is a real person?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
No, you can't have Happy.
Okay. No Shooter McGavin?
No Shooter McGavin.
Oh, man. It's a shooter's game.
That's a tough question. I would have to say we'd have to have Scotty.
Scotty Scheffler,
just because okay. Right now he is on the top of the leaderboard. We have to have him just to see.
Yeah. We have no TARDIS, but I cannot imagine he's nearing the end of that peak.
No,
he's
only no, absolutely get not. He's doing an amazing job.
So 5 is going to be a little bit tough if we're doing a combined list.
We could do 10. We could do 10.
If we're combining, I think it's got to be 10.
I thought it was 10.
Yeah. So you got Scotty. Who do you take, Cody?
Next?
Yeah. Who's next?
Oh, man. Okay. This is going to be a little controversial.
Okay.
But we're talking about the greatest game ever played, and I know that he's not the greatest golfer, but pulled off one of the best upsets.
Okay.
I think we need Francis Ouimet.
Educate me.
He won the U.S. Open.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yeah, fantastic. Why not? I love that.
I mean, he didn't go pro. He decided to stay amateur, went into business, but he had great success as an amateur.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be awesome to see an amateur in their prime with modern equipment to see how they would do.
I'll bet he'd have been fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, John Paul, you.
I'm going to go young Tom Morris.
Okay.
So young Tom Morris was a dominant golfer in his age. Basically, we have the par 5, the long par 5 at St. Andrew. He albatrossed that thing. He did it in 2. But he did it in 2 with, like, a mashie and a gutta-percha ball. I want to put modern clubs in that man's hand because he could strike the center of the club face on some of the worst golf clubs on the planet and just nail it really, really far. He reportedly, I mean, there's no video evidence of his swing or anything. It's way too long ago. But he reportedly swung the club so fast and so hard that his hat consistently came off.
That's like an old-timey comic, man.
It's fantastic. I want to put you know, like a Q10 in his hand with a Titleist Pro V1 and just see what happens. I want to
so
see
he
that.
Either swings it really hard or he had a really bad hatter.
Something like that. Very bad fitting hats, or he could cream it. But either way, I think young Tom Morse. It's hard to choose between young and old. Yeah. But I think even if you talked with old Tom Morse, he would have admitted that his son was better and tragically died very young. So we didn't get to see maybe his best stuff. But he was an extraordinarily talented golfer.
All right, Eric, you got the next pick.
Arnold Palmer, young.
Arnie. Are you thirsty? Oh, you're talking about the golfer.
Yeah, not okay. The beverage.
Arnold. I love Arnie. Arnie's a great pick. Peak Arnie.
The king. That was his nickname.
He was really good. Yeah. Yep. He was really good.
I want to see him in his prime modern clubs, see what he would do.
Okay. Yeah. Kind of based on how this is going, if we're going with 10, it looks like we're each going to have 3, and then we're going to have to come to consensus on a final one.
Okay.
I'm going to add Ben Hogan.
You're taking Ben?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll take Jack.
Jack who?
Jack Nicklaus. Nicklaus.
Jack Nicklaus.
Jack okay. Nicklaus. Let's go with Jack. Because Jack had one of the most fabulous putting strokes I've ever seen. It's the ugliest looking putting stroke, and it worked so well for him. It was so organic. It's almost like, I mean, you look at, he's like the anti-Bryson. If you see Bryson's putting stroke, it's the most like rigid machine putting stroke ever. Like his arm is locked up this huge putter and all the rotation is, you know, this fulcrum and everything. And Jack just kind of grabbed the club and like lined up loosely in the direction of the ball and just kind of had this little stoopy stroke. And he could just stroke the ball.
Pure athleticism.
It was just amazing to watch.
What athleticism.
I love it.
All right, Eric, your final pick.
Rory.
Okay.
You're taking Rory.
Yeah, top of his game, Rory. Because, I mean, he's still doing great. When he was in his, like, the top of his game in super focused, I would say maybe 6 years ago, about, I think he'd be an interesting player to see in there.
He would argue that he's at peak Rory right now.
He does. He does say that.
He said that this is the best he's ever been.
He has his rounds, but I feel like he was more consistent back in the day.
Hmm. I like that.
That's a good pick.
I think my last personal pick, oh gosh, this is hard.
Yeah.
It's probably a toss up for me between Bobby Jones and Sam Snead.
Go Snead.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Sam Snead. Just such a good ball striker and a snappy dresser as well.
It's product of the time.
He is. Okay. I can't believe that we are to the 9th pick. I have somebody else in mind. I've got to go Tiger, though.
I thought I was going to pick him as 10.
Yeah, he's the one that we all agree on.
If we're going to take Tiger as the 10th, then I'm going to go out on one person that I think has no chance of winning, but I just want to see play. I want peak Lee Trevino. I love Lee Trevino, man. And you know what? Actually, I don't want peak Lee Trevino. I want just past his prime Lee Trevino. just kind of a slightly older Lee Trevino out there, because I just think he would add such flavor
to the game. I almost went with John Daly just for that exact same reason.
If you do John Daly, I think you have to do John Daly right now.
What?
I think right now John Daly's hilarious. He golfs barefoot. It's hysterical. Yeah. He walks around with no shoes and a beer, and he can still play really, really well.
Yeah. Some notable mentions that I didn't think quite made the cut, but I think Bryson's up for consideration.
Oh yeah,
he's
definitely
a good golfer. Can I just
say I'm super glad he's on the Ryder Cup team.
Yeah,
super happy he's there.
I hope that
I'm happy for him
he does
and happy
well.
For us.
He has not done great in his matchups. The best person he played with was Scottie Scheffler,
mm-hmm.
but other than that, he has not played well with his playing partners. So we'll see how that pans out.
No.
Anyway, back to our game. Number 10 for me, it's got to be Tiger.
It's got to be Tiger. Tiger. You have Tiger, to have Tiger, Tiger. Peak Tiger.
I figured we didn't even need. It didn't even need to be mentioned. No, but he was going to be the number one.
Here's a question
pick.
For you. When we say peak Tiger, though. Tiger's interesting because he peaked twice.
I don't think when he won the Masters a couple of years ago.
You think that's an aberration? I don't think it's an aberration.
Obviously, it was well earned and put together. I don't think he was at his prime.
Spindly, baggy pants Tiger.
Yes.
Okay. Red shirt.
Red shirt, baggy pants, like Nike sponsorship.
Better hope Tiger. It doesn't rain or he's not making it off the course. Yeah.
Like that's for me is peak Tiger right around then before the scandals and everything kind of uprooted his life.
So I'm assuming we are going to say equipment from right now.
Yes.
Best equipment available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be the most interesting.
I mean, it would be really interesting to give them all Tom Morris's clubs and see the show that occurs because some of those guys can hit it on the screws and some of those guys might not be able to.
Yeah.
But I think I would be more interested in seeing what the old-timey golfers could do with the modern equipment than I am to see what the new golfers could do with the old-timey equipment.
Current gen.
I mean, people can do that on YouTube now. They can get old-timey
golfers. It's true.
So now we need three courses for three different rounds because we have a TARDIS. They can be anywhere. And let's say you pick the course, but rather than picking a time period, maybe you pick what weather conditions. What's the weather you're looking at? So what course and what weather?
I think, oh gosh, there's a lot of good ones.
So many good choices.
Okay. Oh, I wish this was broken down even further and we could just pick individual holes. That would be fun. Mm. Okay, can I talk out loud? Can I ruminate on this a bit? For me, the two choices, just because I love watching golf being played there, is Pebble and Sawgrass.
Yeah.
Those are both fun courses to watch. Hole 17 at Sawgrass can completely change the leaderboard.
Yes, it can.
And Pebble, I know it's not the hardest course, but it's just fun to watch. And as for weather, I'm thinking slightly rainy, so it's a little bit damp, so everything is sticking.
I think Pebble's the better test in a slight rain with breeze than if I had to choose between those two, I'd pick Pebble and over
not,
Sawgrass.
Not one of the storms, not like a crazy storm goes through and stops play, just wet enough so that if their game is on, they can stick it to a foot.
And both of those courses get a little bit of flack because they're modern tour courses. They're currently being used on tour. And they're from an older generation of design. So they're both shorter.
Yeah.
And people actually bag on Sawgrass for being too easy. I'm going to tell you that I still think that they're both excellent tests of golf, but I think both of them are fair. Like something like Wingfoot or Bethpage, they can be impossible.
Yeah.
Like they can be incredibly hard.
So I like watching the U.S. Open because it's generally considered the hardest test in golf.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun to watch golfers fail because it makes me feel like, oh, hey, yay. I suck at golf, so they do too. But I think that in this case, where we want to see the best of the best, I don't want to see someone get unsevierly punished. I want it fair across the board.
Yep. If they're playing good golf, I think that they should be rewarded for it. And I don't think that you get punished for being... I don't think you get punished for being short. And if you hit the fairway, you should get rewarded for hitting the fairway.
Then it comes to your iron game.
Yeah.
So that's my pick. First round, Pebble Beach, slightly rainy.
I love it.
Mid-60s.
Okay. Eric?
Oh, I was going to go for you next, John Paul.
Okay, I'm going to go really controversial on this because it's not a tour course, but that's why I think it would be really interesting to see. I would love to see them play Tobacco Road. That is such a pretty course, and it's unknown. And I think that's what makes it interesting because, like, Augusta, we know every hole at Augusta. We've seen those guys play Augusta. I would love to see them on a course which is, again, not insanely challenging, but very interesting and also very fair. And I think Tobacco Road is all of those things, but I think I want to see him sweat a little bit. So I'm going to go Tobacco Road. I'm going to go upper 80s, but sunny.
Okay. So we've got a first round at slightly rainy in Pebble Beach. Our second round's in Tobacco Road in South Carolina, I think is where that is, in sunny.
Yep.
So that's moving day. Eric, take us to our finale.
Does it have to be in the U.S.?
No.
Okay, because I was thinking St. Andrews, because it's a course that all of them will have played.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, they will all have played the old course.
And they'll all have their own tactics for the mode of attack.
Oh, man, I can see Tom Morris just rubbing his hands together right now. Like, welcome home, boys. Let's go. Yeah. And Rory's like, yeah, old man, let's go.
Yeah.
That's good. That's a good play.
And I want it, because it's characteristic, a windy day.
Can I tell you one thing that I really...
Because there's no protection from the wind on that course.
Do you know what I love about that? And I'll share this. I've talked with you guys about this, but I don't think I've talked about it on the pod. I got the chance to go over there and play.
You've mentioned it a few times.
I got the chance to go to St. Andrews. I had the opportunity this last summer to go to St. Andrews. I got the chance to go over there and play. But... What is fascinating about playing over there is that the golf over there is so different from over here. Like, I was super timid on the greens today, but that's because our greens get burned out.
Yeah.
They play fast, and you have to be super gentle. Like, on our greens, if you're putting downhill, you're absolutely hosed. The grass there is so lush, and they keep it a little bit thicker. It plays way slower than our greens. Like, way, way, way slower than our greens. But it's super pure. There are no imperfections. And so you can give it a good, confident, solid rap, but it's also not subtle. Like, you can easily see what the break is as well. And so I think it's a better test of putting across the generations. I don't think that I worry if you go to something like TCP
Sawgrass?
Scottsdale.
Oh, Scottsdale. Okay.
If you took some of these older golfers and you put them on modern day Scottsdales, they're putting everything off the green because the stimp meter is insane in the summer.
Could you imagine taking someone like Lee Trevino or young Tom Mormis and throwing them in that Coliseum at 16th Scottsdale,
hole at Scottsdale,
where everyone goes nuts?
Could you throwing beer and everything? Yeah,
like Lee Trevino gets hit in the head with a beer and is like, "What the heck is going on?"
He just starts shaking his head.
No.
I just think that a previous generation would look at that and just be like, hooligans.
What has happened? No, but I love that because I think the greens at the old course would be such an equal test for golfers.
It'd be a great equalizer.
I love that. I love it. Plus, it's just darn pretty to look at.
Okay, yeah. I don't know if we're going to be able to come to a consensus here, but I love our round and I love our players with modern equipment.
Who's
going to
win?
Who is going to win?
Gosh.
And I have some thoughts. And
I have no idea.
You guys can think through this. I'm going to talk out loud again while you change your mind. I think that right off the gate, that Arnold, Jack, Rory, and Tiger are near the top of the leaderboard after Pebble.
I'm taking...
Oh, okay. We're going... Okay, yeah.
Course I'm by taking... Course. I'm taking... Tobacco Road. Arnie and Jack definitely... do well on moving day.
What is moving day?
So it's generally the round right before the final round. It's when
the leaderboard
player tries, if they know they've made the cut at that point. So now they are a bit more risky with their shots to try and move up the leaderboard a little bit more.
There's usually disruption of the leaderboard on Saturday than any other day.
Because the second day of the tournament, because traditionally there's four. So usually the second day of the tournament, players are just trying to make the cut and generally play safer. But day three is when, if you're going to move for it, you've got to be a little bit more risky to get those birdies to move up the leaderboard. So they just call it moving day.
Okay. Arnie and Jack do well on moving day. I think Tobacco Road favors them, especially with the warmer climate. A Tiger's going to be in the mix.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And this is going to be a controversial take. I think Scotty moves up. I think Rory fades. I don't think Rory does well Saturday at Tobacco.
Okay. Road. We've seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
Eric, any thoughts going into the finale?
And Lee Trevino's in dead last, and we don't care.
Well, Francis Ouimet, he's just probably happy to be there.
What if he won? That would be fantastic. That would be awesome. That'd be fantastic.
I think this is where Rory really hits his stride.
Oh, at St. Andrews.
At St. Andrews, yeah. Mm-hmm. He gets golf. Yeah, and he gets his... That's what he's played. He grew up with that. And also, I think having the, not necessarily the home field, but like the crowd that's with there, they'd be cheering him on. And that goes a long way towards your morale to have somebody, the entire crowd cheering for you instead of against you. And yeah, I think he would do really well going into that.
I actually think it's Tiger all the way.
I think Tiger wins.
Yeah.
I can't think of any...
He already won at the Open at St. Andrews twice by multiple strokes.
Peak Tiger. Peak Tiger's unbeatable.
Yep.
I just...
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. He is... They call him the GOAT for a reason. Well, that's why I was like,
the number 10, like kind of like, it has to be Tiger. And I almost feel bad even throwing him into the mix because at his peak, I just don't think there's anyone that can touch him.
And I think it would be interesting and it would be close. Like, I actually really like the thought exercise because I can see Jack being at the top. I could see Arnie being at the top. Rory, you can make a great case for him being near the top. Even young Tom Morris, you get back to St. Andrews, he might put a burner around on that course that day and just come from behind. But I think across all three rounds, you can consistently count on Tiger to be near the top, and I think he closes it out because in his peak, he is a throat stomper. No one is beating him.
Agreed.
This is fun. This is a good conversation.
It's a good conversation. Please, listeners, chime in. Maybe we're missing somebody off our list.
Are we wrong?
Yeah. Are we wrong? Is there a course that we should have considered? Yeah. Is there
Rory?
Did we miss a player
that we should be giving love to?
Rory, come tell us why you would have won.
Yeah. Come on the show, Rory.
If he played like he played the Masters this year,
gosh,
then I've never seen someone with more determination
to really
pull it through.
Can I tell you, though, here's the thing with golf that I love about golf. There's so many variables about it. That's what makes it great is that it's on any given Sunday, anyone on that list wins.
Hey, that's a good phrase. People should use that for football.
They should, but it's more true, I think, in golf than any other thing. And on a side tangent, I know that they keep screwing around with the FedEx Cup as far as like the format, and there's been so much hate going around. Like everybody's like, oh, you can't give them that huge lead because then it makes the last day boring and Scotty would win by a million strokes.
He didn't.
And then Scotty didn't win because he didn't have the use. And then everybody's on the internet. It's like, but if he'd had the lead, he would have won by this much. Like, do you know what I think they should do? I think that they should have a winner of each of those events. But when you get to the championship through all 4 weeks, you should be keeping a cumulative stroke score. You want to know who the best golfer is? You count up their strokes across four rounds, across 4 weeks, whoever the smallest number of strokes across four rounds and 4 weeks wins.
Interesting.
I would love to see what that is. And I would love to go through. We could do the math and figure out who would have won. My money's probably on Scotty. Consistently, he was very, very low. But I mean, Tommy was good in all of those rounds. So, and he brought away good. Yay, Tommy. Hooray. Such a good conversation, though. Thanks for playing with me.
Yeah.
It's time for...
Talk Nerdy to Me.
All right. One of my favorite segments on the show that we get to talk about, and today's show notes probably have John Paul and Eric really confused, because literally the only thing it says is Banjo-Kazooie.
I know it's your wife's favorite game. That's about it.
It's one of my favorite games. It's in my top five. And do you know what Banjo-Kazooie is, John Paul?
I do, because I saw it on the show notes earlier today, so I decided to Google it. I've never played it.
So Banjo-Kazooie came out on the Nintendo 64, and that's probably why it had a special place in my heart, because it was one of those games that came out in an era when we would go to Blockbuster and we rented it, and then we would stay up all night seeing how far we could get.
We are getting aged.
Yeah, I know. So to explain a little bit about Banjo-Kazooie, it's a collectathon, which means that there are multiple levels, and on each level you have certain things that you're trying to collect.
And puzzle pieces and music notes.
In this one, it's puzzle pieces and music notes, and jiggies is what they call the puzzle pieces. And the storyline is completely silly because you play as a bear with his bird friend in his backpack, and it's cute and fun, and I actually think it's aged pretty well. I think it's still a fun play, and a lot of the games from that early 3D era are not great, but this one's still fun to me. Anyway, the reason why I bring it up, because I was just thinking of the collectathon, because you collect eggs for ammo, you collect feathers of different types that have different things that they do, you collect music notes, you collect puzzle pieces, and it just had me thinking a little bit.
Are there 1,000 Korok seeds?
Oh my gosh.
So video games have this idea of collecting things for the hardcore players that you don't necessarily have to do to beat the game, but for people that like completing it 100%, they can. But the question that I wanted to pose to you guys, What are some things that you collect in terms of golf in life? So for me,
golf and life or golf?
No, like in real life, golf.
Okay.
So as an example, every time I play a new course, I buy a ball from them with their stamp on it and a ball marker. And if it's a course that I really like, my rare collectibles is a bag tag.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a traveling course, meaning I've traveled more than, say, 50 miles, I'm generally also buying a yardage book.
Hmm.
And these are things that I collect. I have a collection of golf balls with logos that I will never play. I have a collection of ball markers and such that I keep as just kind of like, these are my collectibles for my golf game.
Hmm.
Do you guys have collectibles like that, or am I just crazy?
I have a couple golf ball markers. That's it. I have a couple of golf balls there as well that you guys have given me. Mm-hmm. And my first birdie ball.
When you play a game, do you need to 100% it, or you just play it till you're done and you're said, okay, I'm done?
No, I 100% it every time.
Just doesn't translate into real life for you?
I don't collect things.
Yeah, Eric is not a collector of things.
He's
a very minimalist person, which is okay. It's a really interesting question. I do have collectibles, but they're not consistent. But I'll give you my hierarchy. I play any interesting course, I'll buy a ball marker. I often don't buy a ball because if it's not a ball that's a brand that I like, I really don't care as much. And so balls are less for me. But I'll buy a ball marker from almost anywhere. And I've got ball markers from all over. And I think that that's a really fun, cheap souvenir. But it's also easily identifiable. Like, oh, this is from this place. This is from this place. My two things that are my upper echelon is that I will do a bag tag, but that isn't necessarily the quality of the course. It's how much I paid to play there. So I think if you're approaching a $200 and over green fee, I'm buying a bag tag. At that point, 15 bucks more, who cares, right? I've already blown it, but you can tell that I really, really, really loved an experience when I will pay pro shop costs for a hat. Because those hats are never cheap. And I mean, you go into a pro shop, I love a good hat. And you can, in a modern pro shop, get almost any fit of hat that you like from almost any brand that will have the logoing from the place that you played. But like we played,
they run about 50 bucks.
I know. And we played Wasatch Mountain earlier this summer, and I debated on the hat so much. I could not find a sub $70 hat in that pro shop that I thought felt good. And I was just like, nope, don't love it enough. But I've got hats from St. Andrews. I've got them from Pebble. The hat, I've got one from San Hollow and Coral Canyon. You know I loved that day when my wallet will open up and I will pay that kind of money for a hat.
Something else I know you collect that you didn't touch on. I've seen you at a couple of courses also buy putter covers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Those are very special.
Cover.
I need a new hat.
My current putter cover is a green tartan cover from the old course, which is very cool.
Yeah. When we go for our final round this season, I'm going to pick out a hat because this one's getting worn out, and the other hat that I have that I wear regularly doesn't fit me particularly well. So,
For a new hat.
I just like my display. In my office, I have kind of my wall. I've got a picture of hole 7 at hole 7 at Pebble Beach,
mm-hmm.
And then I've got my collection of ball markers.
Yeah,
and then I need to either get or make. I've been talking about this forever. A place to display my golf balls.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I don't know. It's in my background whenever I'm on my Zoom calls.
You're talking about this ball cover thing. I actually made you guys a display for ball markers because you guys like it.
Yeah.
I know. I didn't make one for me.
Really?
I don't have one. So you guys both have these really cool displays, and I am bereft of one. And now I finally have an office, so I could display one. If only I had one.
Yeah, that really reason why I like collecting these things is it goes in the background. And whenever I'm on a Zoom call, everyone always asks, like, oh, that's cool. You got your golf stuff back there.
Can I ask a tangential question that I think could have some interesting just side spin off here really quickly? I want to go back to your allegory of video games, but I'm going to ask, What's the craziest amount of grinding that you've ever done to 100% a game? What's the best thing that you've got and the most useless thing that you've ever gotten from overgrinding? Like, have you ever ground to get something and then you got it and it was just like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, I know what the reward is for getting all 1,000 Korok seeds in Tears of the Kingdom, and there is no freaking way that I am doing that. There's no chance.
You mean Breath of the Wild?
No, in Tears of the Kingdom, there's also, for 100% in the Korok seeds, there's some sort of...
Oh, yeah. I have had that.
Yeah.
I got all the Korok seeds.
I can't. It's too much grinding, and I have 100% on everything else in those games. I haven't got all the Koroks.
Can I do the opposite? Can I tell you where I grinded, and it felt very satisfying?
Yeah.
Defeating, grinding the level up high enough in Kingdom Hearts to defeat Sephiroth.
Yeah. I was going to say Ultima Weapon. I will grind for that every single time. Just having the Ultima, it isn't even that. I mean, it's a good weapon. By the time you've got it, you don't need it. But it's so darn pretty and just so satisfying to have it. It just makes me so happy.
Beating any of the, all three of the ultimate weapons in Final Fantasy VII. The
Emerald weapon.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's satisfying.
That's a heck of a thing to do.
It's
yeah.
so hard. The first time I beat him, I was like, I almost threw my controller. I was so excited.
Well, because whenever you, it's kind of funny we talk about this, because you can beat a lot of these games without nearly as much grinding.
Oh,
yeah. The final battle with Sephiroth, it's actually kind of a weighted battle. Like, mm-hmm. if you go into the battle with Sephiroth and just use Knights of the Round right off the bat, you think you just win. You don't. He actually gets harder because of that. But if you just kind of, you know, use that strategy against the game itself and use, like, your lesser attacks and everything, you have to meet a certain threshold. But people have beaten that game at really low levels. But those extra bosses, just to give you something else extra to do, I'm glad that games do that, because if you really love the game, it's kind of like, oh, the adventure doesn't end.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't exactly speed run, but I have done Breath of the Wild where I went directly off the Great Plateau and went directly to Hyrule Castle, got a shield, got a sword, got a bow from in there.
Just snuck around the castle.
And then went directly for Ganon and beat him.
Did it not just take forever?
No. It took me a day.
I beat the entire game in
4 hours.
And not even speed running. You can beat Breath of the Wild pretty quickly.
I'm talking about the battle itself, because, you know, you got to...
If you got your deflects perfect,
yeah,
he did
deflecting.
Pushover.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You deflect, and then you just sit there and you do that spin thing with the stamina, but your stamina wheel uses more stamina spinning the higher your level is. So you can get a lot of spin out of a little bit of stamina when you're low level.
Mm-hmm. He's actually not too hard.
Just seems like that'd be a one-hit kill.
Nope. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, if he does hit you...
You have to be pretty close to perfect.
But he doesn't hit you very often.
I love watching, like, the ridiculous people. Like, I saw somebody who, like, tried to beat Ganon with a chicken.
Oh, yeah.
Just admire the heck out of that. I love that. That has to be satisfying. I destroyed Ganon with a chicken.
I love watching speed runs. And every single time that I watch, like, a fun speedrunning event, I'm just like, oh, man, it'd be so fun to get involved with that. And then I just think about how much time these people spend figuring out all of the tiny little bugs and then executing them perfectly. And I was like, I just don't have time for that.
Yeah, there's that glitch in Breath of the Wild for when you're trying to do the Trials of the Master Sword. For the final...
Oh, the Trials of the Master Sword. And let's talk about that, because that's freaking impossible.
So all three of us tried it, and none of us could get it. So there's a glitch that allows you to, at one of the very first ones, jump through the wall. I did that for all three of us, and that gave me a small glimpse of what it was like to, you know, do those speed runs. I don't have the time for that. It was really cool and really satisfying, but... Still took way too long.
Yeah, that's one grind that I really was determined to do. I was like, I'm going to beat all three Trials of the Sword. I'm going to max up the Master Sword. It's going to be fantastic. It beat me. I never succeeded in doing that. I even tried cheating a little bit, like with your glitch, but the third one couldn't kill the Hinox once I got through the wall.
Ended up doing it for you, yeah.
It is so hard.
It's so hard.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. If anybody out there has a game that they either speed run or feel it's been worth it to 100% or completely worthless to 100%, let us know. I want to hear.
Definitely.
We'll revisit this.
Birdie Bev, time for another Birdie Bev.
All right, so we're shaking things up a little bit with our birdie bev today. We've tried hiding the birdie bev, but we don't feel like it adds a whole lot, and it also takes a lot longer to edit. So we're going to try things a little differently and just show it, but we're still going to hide our scores and reveal them at a different time. So go ahead, John Paul, what do we have today?
Okay, we have got, this is a classic, we have got Diet Dad's Old-Fashioned Root Beer. And I just love the way this looks. This is a very familiar root beer. It's highly accessible. Chances are you've seen it. So this is one you could taste along with us. But what makes me excited about this is because A, it's diet, which always makes me happy. B, it's a familiar one, but I would love to see. We've tried so many like really artesian root beers lately. I'd love to see what a poor man's root beer tastes like in comparison. So
this is the Father's Day root beer that everyone in the world has given or gotten.
That's true. You usually see it around like either around the holidays or around Father's Day.
Yeah.
It makes its comeback to the store. Whoever the marketing people are for Dad's root beer, they know exactly what they're doing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they lean into it.
Here we go. Oh, I love not being blindfolded for this. It's so much more efficient.
So, gentlemen, no birdies today, but three pars on the same hole.
Chink, chink to that.
And remember, this is on the diet scale. It's a diet root beer. It's a zero sugar. I've got my score.
I'm locked in.
I'm locked in as well.
All right.
Lead us off, Cody. What'd you mark it?
I gave it a 6.5.
I gave it a 7.
I almost went there.
I'm high. I'm an 8.
Really?
I gave it an 8. I love how it finishes. It finishes so nice. It's so smooth.
Interesting. I thought it was smooth the whole way, and the end, I thought it just kind of left me hanging. But a 6.5 on the diet scale is not bad for me.
Yeah. No, that's not bad at all.
Yeah, I liked it. Even if I, you know, if there were non-diet options, I might pick that. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Can I tell you what I think is interesting about it and why I marked it so? I mean, I like how it finishes. I could drink a whole bottle of that with no problem. There are a few of the root beers that we've tried that are so rich, like you'd have to nurse it for a long time to get it through. And then there are some of them that are so acid that
this,
I had drank this stuff all day and it would be pleasant the whole time and it'd be great. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Go Diet Dad's.
Woohoo.
We should do a regular dad sometime too, just to put it on the non-diet scale and see how that lands.
I agree. We take what we consider a pedestrian root beer. I am not going to argue that that's not complex. It is not complex. It's a very simple flavor. There's not a lot of like voodoo going on to make it interesting. It's just clearly people have fiddled with it to try and make it pleasant to drink, and it's pleasant to drink.
I would like a little bit more
bite
caramel or licorice or some, but it's a nice smooth flavor. An update on our birdie bev situation.
It's a safe root beer. It is safe.
That's a safe play.
What's your update?
That is our last diet. We have 3 more in the fridge and that is it.
I have more. Okay. I'll have to check. I think one's diet. And the rest, you guys saw when you came over to my house to watch Happy Gilmore. You saw my fridge full.
I have a diet that we haven't tested yet either that's going to be really good, I think.
So I had my nephew over, and we had a pizza night, and I was talking with him, explaining the whole root beer thing that we do. And he's just kind of like, well, what are you going to do when you run out of root beers? And I was like, I do not think it's physically possible to run out of root beers for us to try.
Well, I mean, eventually, someday.
Maybe, but then they'll just keep coming out with more, man. Artisan root beers is just a thing. We have years worth, I'd say.
It's true.
That wraps up another episode of For the Record. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. And again, we would love to hear from you. We've had some controversial takes on this episode, and we'd love to get a little bit of feedback and just kind of hear what you have to say. Contact us on our website, ForTheRecord.com, F-O-R-E, ForTheRecord.com. You can also follow us on our socials. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and just a reminder, on Blue Sky, Instagram, and TikTok, we're ForTheRecord_golf.
Like, comment, and subscribe.